Welcome to the Sparked Podcast, a place to keep your spark bright. Here, I've brought together my most powerful tips from the last decade plus partnering with small businesses on all things leadership, mindset, people, and culture. Here, my approach combines intuitive psychology, strategy, neuroscience, and results-based coaching to unlock your highest potential. Step into your power and truly own your role as a leader so that you can spread the positive impacts of your purpose-led work everywhere. My name is Emma Campbell. I'm a mindset and performance coach for purpose-led leaders. I'm a mama to two cheeky little munchkins. I'm a wine appreciator, nature-obsessed, stubbornly optimistic child at heart. And I'm here to inspire belief in what's possible for you because it is all so possible. I hope that this podcast leaves you feeling lighter, more inspired, and more ready than ever to go out there and take actions on your big dreams and vision. I can't wait to dig in. See you in the podcast. Oh my gosh, so excited, and what an absolute pleasure and honor to introduce today's guest to you, Sarah Rusbach. Sarah is the author of the best-selling book, Beyond Booze, How to Create a Life You Love Alcohol-Free. She is also a multi-award winning health and wellbeing coach and accredited gray area drinking coach. Has been interviewed on Channel 9 very recently, and she's a global speaker. I had the pleasure of first meeting Sarah actually in a business mastermind about a year and a half ago. And gosh, just as soon as I heard about the work that she did and just like her mission and what she was all about, I was just instantly inspired. You know, as someone who I would refer to myself as sober curious, I was really, really interested and eager to learn more about her and everything that she does. So Sarah's story is back in 2019. So a good like, you know, five-ish years ago. After developing what she describes as a dysfunctional relationship with alcohol, she actually decided to cut alcohol completely from her life back in 2019 and has never looked back. She now works with women all around the world, guiding them from feeling lost and stuck and out of control, something she fully understands herself, to a healthier and happier way of living. I am currently devouring her book, Beyond Booze, and I can really truly say that I have truly loved it. You'll hear me talk about this in the podcast, actually, how much I've loved it. The piece that I love the most is that, you know, it goes really deep to actually help you understand like why you started drinking in the first place, and what those patterns in your family and, you know, society and generational habits are around drinking, to help you kind of like detangle and unwind some of those unconscious patterns I know that I had before starting to do some of this work. And it has truly opened my eyes to understand myself more greatly, my habits better. And one of my biggest beliefs is that it is only from a place of true deep awareness that we can actually change for the long term. Otherwise, it's just kind of like short-term band-aid solutions. It's only when we actually like dig to the core of where something comes from that we can really untangle that area and drive change that actually sticks. And I can already feel my habits shifting. You know, the piece that I think is really powerful about this book is that it's not just focusing on cutting out alcohol. It's actually focusing on like, what can you bring back into your life in replace of alcohol so that you've actually got a life that is so full and exciting and inspiring and complete that you don't even need alcohol to fill any of those gaps anymore. And gosh, I'm all for that. I felt inspired and excited reading her book, and I can't wait to introduce you to her. Here she is, Sarah. Oh my gosh. Hello, Sarah. So lovely to have you here today. How are you?
I'm so well. Thank you so much for having me, Emma.
Oh my gosh. I was just telling Sarah before we jumped on that. So I've got her new book, Beyond Booze, sitting right next to my bedside table. And I have slowly but surely been devouring it and really, really enjoying it, which we're going to dive all into today. But I was laughing about the fact that my mother brain, or probably it's just my standard brain, can only take maybe like 5 to 10 pages at max anytime before bed.
Yeah, I find I have to read like books that are like, you know, books that get me thinking. I have to read during the day. I can't do it at night because my eyes start going. So I try and set time aside a couple of times a week to just sit and just read, like if I read books I'm reading for work or books that I'm interested in, then I try and do that because I know at night that by, you know, 9 p.m. my brain is like, nah, there's no more information.
100%. Yeah, I so get it. I feel like the only books that are next to my bed that I will actually jump into are ones that I really have like a passion and an interest for, or like books about spirituality or like something that feels quite like light and peaceful. But there's something about like the coloring and the energy of your book that is just keeps wanting to pull me in. And I can't wait to talk more about it. There's so much in there that is just so fascinating. And I just love the fact that you've dived so deep into the why piece behind like what actually led to you drinking in the first place. And, you know, before we go down all the different bits and pieces here, my community and my audience will know that one of my favorite questions to ask, I love to understand the journey of, your childhood and what you were like as a kid, and maybe whether there were any particular childhood experiences or a background during your development that kind of like led to you doing what you do today.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I think I'm exactly where I'm meant to be. And I think that has started for a couple of reasons. So if you found me as a girl, what was I often doing? I was writing, and I was playing news reporter of interviewing people. Like, I've always been so interested in people. I'm such a people person, and I love writing and reading. And because my childhood was quite fragmented, we moved around a lot as I was a kid. By the time I was 13, I'd been to like 5 different schools. And that last move at the age of 13 was particularly challenging for me because we'd gone from Scotland, where I had gone to a very normal, you know, rough around the edges high school, normal comprehensive, where people were like, you know, probably smoking and shagging in the toilets and all sorts going on, and graffiti everywhere and just all sorts, like, you know, it was that kind of school. Yeah. And then we moved to England, where I went to this very posh all-girls grammar school where the girls were like playing lacrosse and netball and hockey at lunchtime. And I felt like I did not fit in at all. But of course, all I ever wanted was to be around people and to have, you know, to have friendship and have a sense of belonging. And that was where alcohol came into it for me as a way to kind of fast track that. And so it's really interesting for me now as a 47-year-old woman to be able to go, okay, I've written a book, which was like a lifelong dream. I've created a community of women which is so supportive, such a sense of connection and belonging, which was, you know, something I've craved for so long. And I'm interviewing people and sitting down and questioning people all the time to help to push them to live their best lives. And so it's kind of gone full circle to the point where I am now, I feel with all of my heart, doing exactly what I'm meant to be doing.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. So cool. And I love that you have been able to, you know, connect those dots there as well, because it is, from what I hear from these you know, interviews that I get to do with people, when people speak about really being in alignment and really being in their passion and their purpose and doing like their, you know, their soul's work or their heart's work, it's when it's quite aligned to what they love doing as children.
Yeah.
You know, talking to people, interviewing people, playing news reporter, isn't that hilarious? That like
totally.
You still get to do the exact same thing now. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. And so I would so love to hear. So obviously you're doing sobriety coaching and you're a gray area drinking coach, and you've written an amazing, amazing book, and you've got incredible communities, courses, all the different things. And I've heard quite a lot about your story, which I want to dive into it a little bit. But what, one of the pieces that I was really interested in was like, when was the moment that you decided that it was the drinking piece that you really wanted to hone in on? Like, as opposed to coaching and going in the general life coaching direction or business coaching or whatever direction you could have gone in, like, was there a specific moment that you were like, yes, this is for me, this is what I've got to do, this is my purpose, this is where I want to head?
It was really interesting, actually, because when I had been working as a executive search recruiter and a career coach for 24 years, and then I'd removed alcohol, and then COVID hit, so my career coaching business had gone on hold because I was working specifically with the legal sector, and all the law firms had hiring freezes. No one knew what the hell was going on in the world. Like, there was just no recruitment, and that felt like it was the moment to go, right, now's the time to make a change, because I had been wanting to, but I was scared. I had a very comfortable life in terms of the career coaching. I was making good money. I had very flexible hours, but I was terribly unfulfilled by it. And I knew I wanted to do something different. It didn't feel like my purpose anymore, but I was didn't know where to start. And then COVID hit, so it kind of forced me to do something different. And I was like, maybe I'll do a coaching qualification. And I did a wellness coaching accreditation because I was interested in all things well-being. Because on my journey of sobriety, I had become interested in menopause, in nutrition, in stress management, in the nervous system, you know, all of these things that had become so interesting to me. So I thought, I wonder if I can support women with that. I'd done my qualification, and then I was really resistant to specializing in alcohol. And I remember my coach, who was helping me like describe my niche, she was like, but why don't you do alcohol? Because that's your story, and that's a niche that not many people in Australia are doing. And I think I felt like, but I don't know enough about it. I've got my coaching qualification and I've got my personal journey, but I don't know enough about how do I support people specifically with removing alcohol. So then I started doing some research, and that was when I discovered the Grey Area Drinking Accreditation Program that I could do with Jolene Park in America. And so I did that. And then shortly after doing that, I shared my story in Mamma Mia, and 8,000 women reached out to me. And that was the start of my business.
Got it. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Like, if you want to sign.
Yeah. Right.
8,000 people saying, yes, we need this. We want to hear more.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Oh, that's so interesting. Okay. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I was thinking like there's certain things in our lives, right, that we just go through ourselves, but we have no passion to teach another person about it. And then there's certain parts in our lives that we might go through a journey, and there's just something within us that just pulls us and says, you need to talk about this. Like, you need to teach on this. You need to coach on this. This is, you know, this is part of your thing. This is part of your mission here. And
yeah.
it sounds like, and it looks like, you know, just from following your story and seeing the launch of your book and your book selling out. I know when I first saw that you were posting about it, I like jumped straight online and it was like sold out. And I was like, oh God, I was too slow.
Yeah, it was quite like, surreal.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I think what happened for me was it was also the realization that there's a lot of people out there that teach and coach in how to get sober, and how to remove alcohol. But what really interested me was less that piece and more, what does it actually take to create a life where you don't want or need alcohol anymore? So we can all take a break from alcohol. We can all, well, most people can, but what does it actually take, require to create a life? So actually, you don't even want or need it. And that's the bit that really interests me. And that's the bit that I get so excited about coaching women on, because it's incredible watching what unfolds for them when they go on this journey of removing alcohol and then starting to add in more activities, interests, hobbies, experiences into their life and go, oh my God, actually, I thought a life without alcohol would be boring, but in actual fact, a life without alcohol is fun and fulfilling and interesting and diverse and energizing and all of those things.
Yes. Oh my gosh, 100%. And I feel like you have shone a spotlight on that in the most beautiful way that I've seen so far. Like, I've read a few different quitting alcohol sobriety books, and I really, really love, like, even on the front cover, but how to create a life you love alcohol free, in brackets. And I think, reflecting on my own personal journey of being sober curious and having like a few months here and there alcohol free and like slowly kind of unraveling the layers of my attachment and my connection to that, but that's the piece that's becoming glaringly more obvious and clear for myself, is that it's almost not impossible but very, very challenging to take out something which was obviously filling such a need and giving you a sense of something without filling that gap, without filling that hole with something that is equally going to help meet that need. And I've started doing all the exercises in your book about like unraveling that why behind what actually like led to the drinking in the first place. And I don't know about you, whether you hear this a lot, but I feel like it's this beautiful journey of actually coming back to understanding like who is my true self? Because often we use alcohol as like a way to kind of, well, I can only speak for myself, but become the person that you thought you needed to be when you were a teenager trying to impress, speaking for myself, impress a boy or impress
Totally.
or be cool or fit in or whatever. And as we start to let go of that and go, actually, who the hell am I underneath all of those different, personas or pieces of identity that we thought we needed to be?
Absolutely. And that, I say it all the time, you can't truly know who you are at that more authentic, deep level if you're drinking all the time, because alcohol distorts your personality. It gives you a fake level of confidence that perhaps you don't have. We adapt our personality to suit the other people around us. Whereas in sobriety, you can't hide from yourself anymore. And that's great. And it's also freaking scary, right? But it's a journey of self-discovery. You cannot not go on that. Like, it's a journey of self-discovery, of deep self-awareness, of facing yourself. And I always say to my ladies, like, many people will reach the end of their lives and never actually know who the hell they really are. And you're doing this and you're on this journey and it's hard, but my God, it's so rewarding as well.
100%. My word for this year is courage. And courage for me means a whole bunch of different things, but the core of it is the courage to be my authentic self. And so this, this unraveling of the layers of attachment and the parts of myself that have been connected to that is part of that journey of courage for myself. And I think, one of the things that I think has been really helpful for me and no doubt for others out there is to remember that it's not necessarily supposed to be easy, that it will come with a level of discomfort, but with that discomfort comes growth. Like that there is an actual, like the growth that's actually occurring in that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're so scared of discomfort. We pick the easy option all the time. And we've been, I feel like we live in this fake Instagram world where the life that we're told that we should be living is one where we're happy and everything's easy all the time, but that's simply not true. And we're just setting ourselves up for such failure if that is how we perceive life to be. And I always say to the women I coach, the goal is not to never struggle. The goal is to struggle well and to arm yourself with tools and strategies so that when we're going through a hard time, which is inevitable, everyone will go through many hard times in their lives. What have I got to support myself that doesn't just involve instantly numbing or distracting with a bottle of wine?
And to struggle for things that matter, like to struggle for a life that feels rich and meaningful, to struggle towards a life that you love, right? Rather than struggling sometimes for the things that we don't even mean to struggle for, that because we're so unconscious and so in default mode. Amazing. I really wanted dive into a little bit about your story. Namely the I guess it seems like there's a real image that pops up for me when you tell the story about I don't know if you use these words, but like your rock bottom moment, of the cut lip or that some cuts on the face and your child seeing you in the morning, and how that was this what it sounds like that was the moment that sort of sparked everything for you, that was like that real, like, no more from here. Do you mind taking us back there and kind of sharing a little bit about like what it was about that moment that really like sparked this whole journey for you?
So up until that point, I'd been drinking consistently. I wouldn't even say heavily, Emma. Like I drank like most people around me drank. I drank well above the 14 units a week, but I was high functioning. I was running half marathons. I was raising two kids. I was running a business. Like it wasn't impacting me on the outside, but it was on the inside. But I was. There's a very famous saying which says, listen to your body when it whispers, so you don't have to hear it scream. And I didn't listen to any of the whispers. The whispers were there, but I didn't want to hear them. And the whispers were, as I got into my 40s and I was using alcohol to unwind, to switch off, to relax, like, the world tells us we need alcohol and it's the solution to all of those things. But I was noticing that it was really disrupting my sleep. So every time I drank, I was waking at 2 or 3 in the morning and I would have hot sweats and I would find it hard to get back to sleep. I was noticing an increase in anxiety. And I went to my GP and I was saying, I'm a mess. I'm so anxious. I've never been like this before. And at no point did she say to me, how much are you drinking? But happily wrote me a script for anti-anxiety meds. And so all of these little whispers were coming through. I was noticing that I wasn't getting the same high from the drinking. It was like I was doing it on autopilot, but I wasn't even really enjoying it. But it was just like I just didn't know anything else to do. So there were whispers, and there was definitely a little bit of unrest within me. But I was pushing it down the moment those whispers came up because it was unthinkable to me to think about it. And then I had the birthday party incident where I was at a 40th birthday and I got very drunk. I was at a girlfriend's house and I'd gone outside for a cigarette because I only smoked when I drank. And I was wearing high heels and I crouched down to put out my fag. And because I was pissed, I fell forward. I toppled over, but I had no reflexes, so I didn't put my hands out. So I actually landed on my face on a concrete driveway. And I mean, I was lucky I didn't like smash my teeth out or break my nose. I cut my nose open, I cut my lip open. There was blood everywhere, there was cuts and grazes. And I got taken home and put to bed. I've got vague memories of it. And then I woke up the next morning. So this was in 2017. And my 5-year-old daughter was standing next to the bed and she said, Mummy, what happened to your face? And that moment, the shame that I felt, the disgust, the self-loathing, the regret, and like my husband had never questioned me about my drinking, and even he just like the look in his eyes, like the disappointment, and it was just a wretched feeling. And I'd love to tell you I never drank again. That wasn't true. I went to that night. I drank wine out of a straw because I couldn't actually hold a glass to my lips because they were so cut. But I needed something to take away how I was feeling. And so I drank wine through a straw until I didn't feel anymore. But that was the very much the start of my journey. And then 3 weeks later, I was lay hungover on the sofa scrolling Facebook, and someone in my running group posted that she'd taken a break from alcohol and how incredible it had been for her. So I thought, right, I'm going to do 21 days. They say it takes 21 days to break a habit. And in my head, I just had a bad habit that I needed to break. So I did my 21 days and I felt so good. I just kept going. And I got to 100 days, and like everything that was a problem from the drinking disappeared. My sleep improved. I had loads of energy. I lost weight. My anxiety disappeared. My skin looked amazing. I felt more positive. I was being a really present mum. I was calmer. I was smashing goals at work because I was never hungover. So all of these positives, but equally at the same time, I was really struggling on a social level because one of my core kind of needs is very much connection and belonging, which is all, you know, trauma from my past of moving around so much. And I had definitely created a persona that I was Sarah the party girl. That was all I did. I just had people to my house all the time to get pissed, or I went to their house. And so I didn't want to be around my friends when they were getting pissed all the time, because that wasn't fun when you're not drinking. But it meant that I kind of withdrew from people, and then that wasn't good for me either. And so I went back to drinking because I was like, well, I can't never drink again. That would just be weird. I'm Sarah the party girl. But in my head, I was like, well, I've done 100 days. I've broken the habit. Everything will be all right. And I went back to drinking. And within a few weeks, I was back to drinking the same level as before, because that's what happens for grey area drinkers. But I never forgot how good I felt. And over the next couple of years, every time I drank, the same problems came up. And I never forgot how those problems disappeared when I wasn't drinking. And it took 2 years, but finally, April 2019, so nearly 5 years ago, I had my last drink, and that was that.
Oh, amazing. I mean, I just got chills as you said that. That's so fantastic. And I love as well how real you are in that journey, because, you know, I mean, I can only speak for myself, and I know that the journey of unraveling all those different layers attached to alcohol is not going to be an overnight or even a 30-day or a 21-day process, but I know I'm going to get there. And the fact that, you know, you were saying that it was around a 2-year-ish journey, but there was a moment that you just went, I know that this is going to be the last drink. And 5 years now, that's incredible. That's incredible. I really loved when you spoke about, you know, I think it's particularly with the gray area drinking that and probably like high achieving or high functioning, you know, ambitious high performers out there who have maybe are still able to hold it all together or make it look like everything's all good on the outside, but it's the struggle on the inside that was actually the thing that shifted everything for you. And I think that's so interesting, because when I was reflecting on, well, you know, why do I actually want to do this? And you know, everything on the outside is pretty fine. but the piece for me, and I think you've spoken to so clearly, has been around just the amount of space that it can take up in the mind. Of even just thinking about, oh, should I have a drink tonight? What sort of drink should I have? How many should I have? Should I have one at this event? Or when should I go get my next one? And that means, you know, say, for example, even being at the house with the kids, our kitchen's quite far away from our backyard. So it means leaving the kids in the backyard, going and getting a glass of wine, and then coming back. And, you know, just it sounds so little, but it's like this mental space that can be taken up with something that's just, you know, so silly about how, you know, when's the next drink, versus the space that can then be used to be present in the moment, actually enjoying, you know, the time with the kids and nature and, I don't know, all of those sorts of things. And yeah, I don't know, was that ever something that you were quite aware of as well?
Yeah, like they say in the sober world that when you quit drinking, you free up about 25% headspace.
Ah.
Like, and you just think about how many people who are dulling down their capacity and their potential because 25% of their headspace is being taken up with internal chatter and negotiations around, well, I said I wasn't going to have a drink tonight, but I really fancy a drink. So maybe I could have one tonight and then I just won't have one tomorrow. Oh, but I'm out tomorrow. So what would I do about tomorrow? Like that was the chatter in my head. And when we take it off the table completely, what that does is free up our potential. And the thing that I say to people is, you don't have to be an alcoholic for alcohol to be robbing you of your potential and your full what you can achieve in your life. And I say to people, just take a break for 3 months and see the difference. Because the fact is that most people in the Western world will never take a long enough break from alcohol to actually know how they could perform, how they could show up, how their life could be different without alcohol in it. Because if you're not drinking at the point where your drinking is keeping you in bed and you're not vomiting the next day and you're not so hungover, then you kind of think, oh, it's okay. I might feel a little bit tired in the morning, but I'm all right. We don't, and then we become used to thinking that that 5 or 6 out of 10 is the norm and it's as good as it gets. And then you remove alcohol and it's like, holy shit. Like it's like going from living in black and white to living in color. That's the only way I can describe it, is the potential and your capacity and your energy and your mental clarity and your positivity, because you go from being someone that your self-talk has maybe been along the lines of, oh, well, you're terrible, aren't you? You said you weren't going to drink last night. And look at you, you had a whole bottle of wine. Now you're waking up at 3 in the morning. You've got this big presentation at work today. You're not going to do well. Like instead, you're waking up in the morning going, right, boom, smash it. Another great night's sleep, another day ahead of me. What am I going to do this morning? And it's such a different mindset.
100%, 100%. How did you, I don't know whether detach is the right word here, but how did you unravel the party, Sarah, the party girl identity and the connection with, because the one key thing, which I'm sure is very, very common from what you hear is, alcohol equals fun. And how does one have fun if there is no alcohol? Can you share a little bit on that piece, how you managed to come back into that?
Yeah, and so I think it was really important for me to have women who'd gone before me who supported me on my journey, because that's what I feel like the sober world is. It's just people, particularly for on the female side, but across the whole community, where there's someone ahead of you just holding out a hand and showing you, come with me, let me show you what to do. Because we live in this world that has dictated that, we start having fun in our teens, right? And so that's where we go out, we start partying, we associate fun as being getting pissed, meeting, having sexual encounters and making new friends and going dancing and all of those things, which is a rite of passage, right, in your teens and early 20s. So then the brain creates this kind of neural pathway that is fun equals going out with your friends and getting drunk. And we've stopped seeing anything else as fun. And then you get to being, almost 48 years old, and you're kind of like, so is going out, getting drunk, losing my phone and handbag, not remembering how I got home, eating a kebab on the way home, throwing up, waking up with my clothes on, having to get my kids to cricket at 7 in the morning when I'm still probably a bit drunk, is that fun? Like, but we keep living in this society that perpetuates the message that that's fun. And so the journey of untangling that, it takes time. But we can sit down and we can actually look at our beliefs, and we can sit there and go, so what actually is fun? Fun is anything we do for our own enjoyment and pleasure, right? So fun is not just an Instagram ability photo of being in a bar with your mates drinking Cosmopolitans. Like for me, fun can be being in my pajamas at 6 o'clock on a Friday night with my daughter, eating popcorn and watching Dirty Dancing. Fun can be getting up at 6 a.m. to go for a sunrise hike with my best friend. Fun is going and doing a degustation menu with my husband and trying loads of food. Fun is going and on this Sunday, I'm doing an ice bath breathwork 3-hour
Oh,
workshop thing. Like that to me, like it's adding in all the things. Whereas I feel like as women and men, when we get to middle age, we've stopped experimenting. We've become very, very habitual. We only think of socializing with booze as being our only way of having fun. And our world has actually got really, really small. And what happens when we remove alcohol is our world starts to open up because we start trying new things. I've just started adult hip hop dancing classes. I'm absolutely loving it. My
Okay.
best thing ever. And it's just loads of fun because I get to move my body to music, which, I was a raver back in the day. I was out clubbing till 7 in the morning, like with my like glow sticks and all the rest of it. So for me now to be able to go and find a way to still move my body to music and have fun and not care if anyone's watching me, like I love it. And so it's really important that we go on this journey. And I've got a whole chapter in the book of how to discover what your fun plan is when it doesn't involve alcohol.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Oh, I love that so much. And I can see it in you as well. Like you're lighting up as you're talking about these things as well. I think that's so important. And you might have to send me the details to this adult hip hop class as well.
Yeah, for sure.
So wanted to slightly change tracks, still very much on the topic, but something that I've been, how old are your kids again?
They are 12 and 14.
12 and 14. So something that I've been thinking about a lot is, knowing our kids are who they are in so many ways. I think that I've never learned more and more, being a parent now, how much your kids are really like born in the energy and the personality, like, that they are, that there's not much that you can really like shift and change there. But I thought if there was a particular like quality that I would love to nourish in them, to nurture in them, to cultivate in them, something like a quality that I thought was really, really important for their success or their fulfillment or their potential in their life. What comes up for you when you think of that? Like as a really important quality to one experiencing a sense of fulfillment and success in their life.
I think it has to be resilience. And I think it has to be like being able to cope, being able to have tools, teaching my kids how to develop a toolkit of this is how I support myself when things don't go to plan. Because we can't raise our kids to believe everything is always going to go to plan. Like I've had a couple of issues. It's been a really hard start to the year with my daughter. And a few things have happened that have really knocked her for six. And she's had a very smooth sailing life up to date. And so she's just started high school. There's lots that comes with that. And in actual fact, it's been hard, but it's also been a gift because in that I've learned so many tools around supporting my nervous system, around resilience, around managing difficult situations in sobriety, because drinking Sarah just drank them all away. If my kids saw me having a difficult day, all they would have seen would have been me reaching for a glass of wine. And then you've got that whole monkey see, monkey do. And there is evidence that shows that daughters of mothers with alcohol use disorder are like something like 7 times more likely to develop alcohol use disorder themselves because they've never had self-care modeled to them. So all they've seen mum do is reach for a wine every time she's feeling discomfort, stressed, anger, sad, whatever it is. So I had a beautiful moment the other day where I'd had a really stressful day. I was coming off a Zoom and I said to Scarlett, "Oh, mum's like really stressed. I've had it up to here. I'm going to need some downtime when I get off this last Zoom call." And I finished my Zoom and I came out of the office and she said, "Mama, mama, come with me." And she took me into the bathroom and she'd run me a bath and she'd lit candles and she'd put my favorite bath oils in there. And I just sat there in that moment, was like, wow, because a few years ago, she'd have gone and poured me a glass of wine. Like she literally would have gone, that's what mum needs in this moment, because that's what I'd modeled to her. And so actually showing they pick up on everything,
Oh my gosh, yeah.
right? And so
Very.
like there's evidence now that shows by the time a toddler is 2 years old, it can identify whether parents drink as alcoholic or not, and whether the situation, what situations they are more likely to drink alcoholic drinks.
Interesting. Oh my gosh. That's a
Right?
very nervous laugh you can hear coming out.
Well, look, my kids were, how old were
My
they?
God.
7 and 9 when I stopped. So they'd had a lot of impressions around, me and my husband drinking a lot. But you can repair, and that's the beauty of all of this.
100%. They must be so inspired by your journey.
Yeah, look, I don't think, I certainly don't think Scarlett can actually really remember much of me being a drinker.
Yeah.
William definitely can. And one Mother's Day at school, he had to write a letter about all the things that he was proud of and about his mum. And he wrote a letter that goes up on the wall. I think you're amazing because you help other women to stop drinking, and nobody else's mum does that. And I was like, oh.
Oh, that's amazing. It's so beautiful.
So beautiful.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. I love as well that talking about the importance of building resilience in your kids and not, not taking away the challenges, but equipping them with the tools to be able to actually move through the challenges. And I don't know about you, but if there's one thing that I have slowly but surely been starting to realize is that, like, if there is one of the most important tools that we can equip our kids with, it is the ability to recognize an emotion, to sit with an emotion, to not judge the emotion, to let that emotion teach you a lesson or to move through you or whatever it is, rather than all of the different things that we do in our lives. Like, almost every unhealthy habit that we find in our lives is usually due to a difficult emotion that has become too hard and we just don't know how to deal with it. And I know that I've definitely spent the last 5 years of my life learning how to identify, to sit with, to not push away, to actually be with, and kind of whether it's meditation or mindfulness or, breathing into it or whatever. But how equipped our kids are going to be compared to back in the day for us and
Because if you think about us growing up, and I don't know if you were the same, but I grew up in an era where, if you fell over and hurt yourself, it was instant distraction. Oh, look, let's go get you an ice cream. Let's kiss it better and get you an ice cream. Or if you felt an emotion about something that our parents didn't warrant was an appropriate response, it was often, oh, don't be silly. Oh, don't worry about that. Like, lots of things were just brushed under the carpet. And I'm not blaming our parents. I think a lot of them, that was how they were raised, to kind of, like, if you had a roof over your head and food on the table, that was kind of all there was to moan about. What do you mean Katie wouldn't play with you in the playground? Don't be silly, it'll be fine, it'll be fine tomorrow. And not having those emotions actually acknowledged. Whereas what I try so hard, and I don't get it right all the time, but what I try so hard with my kids to do is just to be able to sit there and go, that's really hard. Yeah, I get it. It's really hard. Scarlett was really disappointed about something the other day and it made her really sad. And I said to her, I'm so sorry that you're feeling this way, but please remember, this feeling won't last. It's temporary. How you feel right now is not how you're going to feel later or tomorrow. It just feels very raw and painful at the moment. Let me just give you a big hug. And just know that I'm here and know that I love you and know that I see you in this. Whereas I didn't used to have those tools. So before, I would have just wanted to do anything to immediately distract her from that feeling, which isn't the right thing to do.
100%, 100%. And I think how that really relates into, thinking about drinking, when you had that exercise in the book that said, can you remember the first drink that you ever had? And I very clearly remember having a phone call with a boy that I really liked and feeling too nervous and probably not cool enough just as I was. And so stealing a beer from the fridge and having a big glug of that before the phone call, because that fear, that feeling of not enoughness or whatever it was just too much for me to bear. And I had no other tools in the moment. And I think that's one really beautiful thing that we as parents can know that we can also, like, not only model some really healthy behaviors for our kids, but also equip them with the tools to be able to actually recognize that emotion and to know that it doesn't have to it doesn't have to control your life and you don't have to push it down, but there's actually ways to move through that and breathe with it and be with it.
But isn't it interesting when you say that? I think that even though you'd never drank alcohol before, you had created a belief that that's going to help me. So where had that come from? And I think it's also really important that we pick that we understand the subliminal messaging that we are always exposed to around what does alcohol give us. At some point, even though you'd never had it before, so you had no lived experience, your brain had created a connection that if I drink alcohol, it's going to make the fear go away and it's going to give me more confidence. So that belief was there, even though you had no lived experience of it.
So interesting. So interesting. What a journey. What a journey. Oh my gosh. Thank you for doing the work that you do. I would love to know what is the mission? What is the purpose? What is like the future that you hope to create through your work? What is that purpose behind why you do what you do and what
I
you
think I launched the business at the start because I wanted to really support people, particularly women, to know that you don't need to be an alcoholic for alcohol to still be taking from you. And if you've noticed at any point that it's taking more than it's giving, you have full permission to go and make a change and to experiment with taking a break from alcohol. And that was always my initial mission because we live in a society that says the only people that quit drinking are alcoholics. And actually, that's simply not true. And so that was my mission at the start, and was also to show women that there are other ways out there to relieve our stress, to create more fun and fulfilling lives that don't have to revolve around alcohol. And that's why I share my story and my journey so openly, because I know it's one that so many women relate to. So my mission was always that, for women to feel less alone, and to know that there were ways that they could support themselves. In all honesty, if I could, I think at some point I would love to do more with younger girls. I would love to get into schools. I would love to support the next generation,
Yes.
because I didn't have the education and the information about alcohol back in my day that I think, and who knows, I probably wouldn't have listened. I was a 14-year-old girl, right? But I think just to have some of the information out there would be great. And I'm just really wanting now as well to start doing more within corporates, because I think the Australian drinking culture, we are the number one binge drinking country in the world. We ostracize people for not drinking. We ridicule people for not drinking. We still have a society where it's seen as negative or shameful if you don't drink, don't go down the pub with your colleagues on a Friday night and things like that. So I'm doing more and more in that space as well, with working with big corporates to I was flown up to 8 mine sites last year to go and deliver talks on grey area drinking, signs that you're a grey area drinking, and just introducing this concept of grey area drinking to other people.
Amazing. How was that received?
So well. So well. I was very nervous, but it was absolutely fabulous.
Oh, that'd be amazing. And particularly the fact that so many of, I mean, I don't know if all of them or if many of them are dry sites anyway. So it's like a perfect opportunity to actually be able to catch people during kind of like break.
For sure.
That's so cool. Now, one last little question for you, which is always an interesting one to check in on. Through your own journey with quitting alcohol, starting your own business, probably writing a book, has there been a particular limiting belief, mindset blocker, cheeky little story that can pop up for you and either bring you down or slow you down or sometimes, completely get in the way. I love to normalize the fact that we've all got these stories in our head that, tell us things that often are not helpful or not true. And is there one that sort of pops up for you and how have you moved through that?
And my limiting belief is not one that stops me. It means that I do too much. So my limiting belief, I come from, a very my family were very hard workers. You weren't a good enough person unless you were working hard. That was how I got seen. That was how I got praised. I then went straight into the corporate world. My first few jobs were very sales intensive. It was you were only as good as the last placement that you made, the commission that you made. And so the narrative for me has always been, I'm not a good enough person unless I'm working all the time. So in actual fact, for me, I have to work really, really hard on slowing down. I have to work really hard on setting boundaries with my work. And it's so hard for me, Emma, because I'm so passionate about what I do, and not a single moment of it really feels like work because I love it so much. But I have to always remind myself that I'm no use to anyone if I burn out. So for me, the belief that one of my strongest affirmations that I say every day is, it is safe for me to stop. Because my belief is, I couldn't take a break during the day. Like if I had a block in my diary, even though I had a mental day that might have been calls from 7 in the morning till 7 at night, to sit down on the sofa and watch like Netflix for an hour in the middle of the day because I would be working late that night, to give myself permission to do that used to be so hard. And so the work I do on myself now is actually on the slowing down piece.
Amazing, amazing. And having the clarity and awareness around that, right, to be able to catch it is the power spot.
For sure. Yeah.
Oh, amazing. Oh my God, Sarah, thank you so much for coming onto the Spark podcast. As you can probably tell, I could sit here and chat with you for hours.
No, I've loved talking to you. Thank
Been
you.
amazing. And is there anything that you wanted to share with my audience in terms of I mean, obviously you've got the book, whether there's communities, yeah, anything at all in terms
Yeah.
of getting in touch and reaching out.
But definitely, if this is like my book is not for women who identify as having a problem with alcohol, it's not about that. The book is just around tools to create a happy, fulfilling, fun life that doesn't only focus on alcohol. It's written for midlife women, and there's tons of information in there. So to read the book is not about going, I've got a problem. To read the book is about going, I want a life where I don't need to rely on alcohol or turn to alcohol as my only coping strategy. And I want to explore what life might look like at this age with less or no alcohol in it. So I really recommend exploring that. I'm so proud of the book and all of the tools that it offers. And that's available worldwide and across all the standard places. And then I have a free Facebook community called the Women's Wellbeing Collective. And that's a community on Facebook which really supports women who are sober curious, who are wanting to kind of explore what life without booze might look like. And then I'm very present on Instagram as well with lots of tips and tools and strategies that I share on there.
Amazing. I'll drop all of the links into the show notes for everyone. And I think that's such an important distinction that you made, that you know, the term gray area drinking, as you've defined beautifully in the book, is that, you know, if there was a scale of, you know, 1 to 10, it's kind of that middle zone. It's not necessarily that there's a problem, but there's, I love that term, that a curiosity towards what could life be like without alcohol? What could life be like? And I know that that personally has been a really big motivation for me. Like, oh, I wonder what could be possible. I wonder what it could be
Totally.
like. So, yeah.
And I just watch women and men remove alcohol and the stuff they go on to achieve in their lives, they just never thought was possible. Like it's incredible to watch.
100%, can't wait. Thank you so much. I'm sending you all the love.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed, I would just love it if you took one little minute to leave a quick review or even to share this potty with a friend who you think might benefit from its message. It's honestly hearing your feedback that keeps me going and helps me spread the word to get in the ears of other people just like you, who are going through similar challenges and keen for a little bit of inspiration. Thank you so much. I love you. I appreciate you. And I'll see you in the next podcast.